Welcome to the Thinking Fellows podcast. I'm producer Caleb, and I'm joined by Dr. Rod Rosenblatt, Dr. Scott Keith, and once again, Pastor Paul Koch. If you didn't listen last week, you definitely should. Pastor Koch joined us for an amazing episode on preaching the law and the gospel. And so he's here to do a second recording today for this mid-series where we're just doing as many guests as we could possibly squeeze in between what we just came off of, which was apologetics, and what we're going to, which is great minds of the Christian church, of the church. And today we're going to do something different. I like these in-betweens where we can get guests on because we can do stuff that we would never touch on in these little segments that we do, which are good because it's consistent. People really like to hear this educational stuff that we do, but these are just a lot of fun to have people on. These are some of my favorite episodes to record. And today we're going to do one on friendship. And you and Paul, Scott, have been friends for a long time, so I think this will be...
Yeah.
This is important to you. Your book centers, I think... I mean, being dad is part of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Too.
Yeah.
So,
I don't think we mentioned it last episode, or we did in the break. That Paul is the editor for Jagged Word, editor in chief for Jagged Word. I like that title, editor in chief.
I like it too. Yeah, it
sounds. I will take credit for that.
sounds real fancy.
That was Caleb.
I will go back to the last recording. Yeah.
But you know, Paul and I have been compiling some of a collection of some of the blogs, and in doing so, I realized that even if we just counted the time that we've been writing on Jagged Word together, that's going on 4 years now.
I know, yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
It's crazy.
Yeah. So, friendship. I wanted to start out with one of the, it's kind of funny, people may not realize this, but one of the reasons I wanted to do Thinking Fellows was an inspiration from the year before we started the podcast. I read as much C.S. Lewis as I could. Like, I actually spent the year sort of systematically reading, I think, almost everything, except for his official academic work on literature, which I tried, and it just went way over.
Sure.
I think everything, and then a bunch of biographies about Lewis and Tolkien and the Inklings. And as part of that year, I'd read The Four Loves before, and then researching Being Dad, I read The Four Loves. But from the time I started researching for Being Dad and today, I think I've read The Four Loves 15 times. It just, I don't know, there's parts of it that just hit me. And I don't always read all of it. I always read the section on philia, of course, on brotherly love.
By the way, it's the only thing we've got where he does it in his own voice. You can get audio.
Well, that's part of the benefit for me is I have the audio on my phone.
I didn't know that. That's
and
great.
It's him reading it from his notes.
From his notes before the book existed.
So it's not exact, but it's very close. And so I fly a lot. And sometimes you don't want to work, and sometimes you don't want to read, so it's really easy to throw on The Four Loves and listen to it again. But there's this section. When I started the Thinking Fellows, this little section I'm going to read from The Four Loves is what I had in mind. This is Lewis talking about after one of those famous English walking tours, you know, where they'd set out with their walking sticks and their shoes and their rucksacks, and they'd walk from inn to inn. There's actually some pictures of Lewis on one of those tours.
It's like old-time pub crawls?
Yeah.
Oh.
Pretty much.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So this is him after a day on a walking tour. He says, those are the golden sessions, when four or five of us, after a hard day's walking, have come to our inn, when our slippers are on, our feet are spread out toward the blaze, and our drinks at our elbows, when the whole world and something beyond the world opens itself to our minds as we talk, and no one has any claim on any responsibility for another, but all are free men and equals as if we had first met an hour ago, while at the same time an affection mellowed by the years enfolds us. Life, natural life, has no better gift to give. Who could have deserved that? And I think I wanted the podcast to be something like that, that people could sort of eavesdrop in on. I'm not sure we've completely hit it yet, but I think we're real close. And so it surprised me today when my wife Joy and I were talking about Paul coming down to be on the show, and she said, "What are you going to do?" And I said, "We're going to do preaching law and gospel." And she said, "You should do friendship. You guys have never done an episode on friendship." And I said, "No, we have. We've done an episode on friendship. Come on." She's like, "No." So I texted Caleb, like, "Have we ever done an episode on friendship?" And he goes, "No." And I went, "Wow, that's really odd, seeing as how..." For me, that was the impetus for starting the podcast.
Yeah, The Four Loves, to give kind of a setup for it, is a word study on four Greek words for love and the difference between those. And in each case, he lists their strengths and also their weaknesses.
Right.
Now, you might say, what a boring book, word studies. No. What he does with the one on philia is just dynamite.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of a true story of R.C. Sproul. I might have told this before. Vesta, his wife, walked in on R.C. and he was watching Tombstone again.
Yeah.
And she said, R.C., why are you watching that again? How many times have you watched that? And he said, because it's almost gone, Vesta. Because it's almost gone.
Reminds me of the line from Doc. Well, hell, Doc, I've got a lot of friends. I don't. Yeah. Yeah, so what is this thing? Paul, you and I write a lot. I've been sort of collecting up some of our blogs. Talk about that maybe someday later. But as I'm collecting them, I mean, I could count them right now, actually, but the sheer number of blogs that you and I together have written on friendship is, there's quite a few of them.
It's, as Lewis deals with it, it's non-homosexualized love between those of the same sex. The French word camaraderie is probably the closest. Or if you think movies, Band of Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's powerful, powerful stuff. To be without it is to be alone in the worst of ways. And he'll convince you of that in that chapter. He will convince you of it.
Yeah. So, again, writing a lot on this, reading a lot on this, why is this so important to us? I mean, I can say, even in my conversations with my wife, it can actually cause somewhat of tension because I'm known to say to her that you're not my friend in that same way. And, you know, after she's insulted, I'll say, hey, listen, you're something in a way that's, in a particular way, a higher order of creation, right? You're my wife.
Sure.
I love you. You're a part of me. We're of one flesh. There are so many things, but in that particular way, as it's described in Four Loves, that philia, I wouldn't say that. Like she's my lover. I have as close with her as close as I can get. I think to agape.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with joy in my kids. But friendship of the nature that we're talking about today, mainly friendship with other men.
Yep.
Is of a different order, and it's important to me. But even Lewis will say that it's so important to us because it's not necessary for survival.
Right.
Right? It's a value add.
Uh-huh.
Right? Does that make sense? So in a real way, my wife is necessary for me and for my kids and for survival. She's got, again, that in orders of creation, it's almost a higher order in that it's needed. Friendship in this way is not in the same way, yet I feel the need for it deeply.
I wonder if when Lewis wrote this, he's describing beautifully what he sees and what he's experienced, and I think this is heightened so much more for us today because it's not necessarily describing what we have. I mean, for some it is, but for a lot of people who will read that, men who read that, it is describing something they long for and do not have. This goes back to watching Tombstone, and in that sense, it's strange when we talk about this topic or even movies. You know, like, I mean, I think we all love Tombstone. One of the big themes of it is that friendship,
Doc and Wyatt,
that comes out, and it's emotional for me.
Yeah, me too.
I get, like, you know, I get choked up. It really hits me, and a part of it, I think, is that longing, and learning in life how crucial that is.
Yes,
to living, to being a man, father, all those things. That friendship is just key. And so I don't know if that's true, but I just, you know, if Lewis is talking about something that is longed for, it doesn't seem that way. At least my you've obviously read it or listened to a lot more, Scott. But rather, he's describing something there. But I think in our day and age, it's so much easier to be alone, or so much more convenient to just go your own, to sit at home, to not engage in the way you used to maybe have to be engaged in the world alongside other men.
I think in a particular way, easier is a good word. And yeah, easier in the sense is it's like it, there are many ways to live your life that are easier, but the value of your life, you know, lived will be lower.
Yeah.
Like it's easier to just sit on the couch and watch TV.
Right.
Or, you know, sit on the couch. In fact, I think this is where, to be honest with you, one of the places where millennials get stuck a lot. It's easier just to wake up, pour yourself an orange juice or a cup of coffee, sit down on the couch and play video games all day. But the value of that life is much less, even though sort of in a real particular kind of way, it is easier. Like, you know,
sure,
you don't have to get up, you don't have to get dressed, you don't have to make yourself presentable, you don't have to, you know, whatever. You just go do that easy thing. But in the long run, I don't know if easier. My life without friends is definitely harder.
Mm-hmm.
In a particular way, too.
Right. Yeah. You know? Do I have anybody who will, every time, I can bet my mother into white slavery on it, who every time will put the best construction on everything that I've done? Will he do it?
Right. Right.
And then the crowd reduces to...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Like two, three?
Yeah.
Right.
Sorry.
Yeah.
If you listen to this show.
Yeah.
Don't be sorry. That's,
you know who you are.
It is.
You know who you are.
Yeah. Thank God Lewis set that thing right at center stage and put light on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it explained a whole bunch of things that I had known in and out of life through the years, but had never thought about in a way that I really needed to think about. And be very grateful to the guys who would stand with me in the worst of circumstances.
Right.
Yeah. My worst.
Right. Yeah, that's a. I have a friend, Pastor Tim Barquette, and he'll say, I need you to be the guy when I call you and say, we need to go bury something in the desert. You don't ask many questions.
Yeah.
You show up.
Yeah.
You know?
That's Goodwill. That's, you know, Goodwill Hunting, right?
Yeah.
As the Robin Williams character is trying to explain to the other genius,
the academic,
why Matt Damon holds on to these low-life, quote-unquote low-life friends,
yeah,
from the inner city Philadelphia. And he says, because without asking a word, any one of those guys would take a shovel to your head.
Yep.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
And I'm like, yep. Yeah. And I mean, people may hear that and go, well, you want people to take, you want to beat people up or bury bodies? And it's like, no, that's not what it's about.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
right.
About the fact that I know that guy's got my back.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, no matter what. And he's not going to ask a lot of questions in the process.
Yep.
Well, and that's even the context of that doc quote that you get there. It's when they're going to die.
Yeah, it reminds me of when my father died very unexpectedly. I was second year college. And my fraternity brothers, pagans to the everyone, minus some Roman Catholics who practiced because they were afraid not to get up Sunday morning. But for the most part, a pagan fraternity. But the thing I remember was that they showed up at the funeral. They had nothing to say to me, but they were there, and they poured drinks for me.
Yeah, right. They're friends. Yeah.
Yeah. This may be a hard show to get through.
That's the issue. Not the issue, but that's what's so striking about this is it gets emotional so quick for us. For me, I know... And it's maybe in today's age with Facebook, with these kind of things where the term friend has been co-opted in so many ways. We throw it around. You know, I'll do this with my kids. My daughter will say, well, I want to go to so-and-so's house. And, well, who's that? Well, that's my friend. Well, what's her last name, right?
Uh-huh.
I don't know. And I'm like, well, that's not a friend. Like, you know uh-huh. that we're going to reserve this word for friendship,
yeah.
You know, and that is something very unique, and hopefully she'll become a friend, that kind of thing. But that mm-hmm. it's not automatically it just because it's an acquaintance. Like,
right.
Let's be clear of who those people are in your life. And I think people find they're just few. And if they are few, or even if I think there's men, I think there's a lot of men, that there's none.
Yeah.
Oh, I think that's true.
The and, closest thing I know to it is drinks together after work.
Right.
That's the closest I can come
yeah.
for those who have never known somebody like that of yeah. their own sex mm-hmm. is drinks after work.
And most men aren't allowed to do that anymore if they're married.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm serious.
No, yeah.
I'm not even kidding. I can't tell you how many times I invite some of my friends out for drinks and they just say they can't.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think, yeah.
Another aspect of that is how many men I've known whose wives really were glad that he, their husband, had some good friends.
Yeah.
And on the flip side, wish that their wives had the equivalent yeah. but don't see it.
Yeah.
And need their wives to have genuine friends, not to yeah. gather together to say what a loser my husband is.
No, that doesn't count. No, I'd put myself in that category quite often. You know, my wife, she sees the few friends I have, and she knows their value in my life.
Uh-huh.
And she encourages that.
Good for Cindy.
And yet on the flip side, I will often do just like I long for her to have that. And
exactly.
It is rare, and sometimes, you know, my problem is I don't know how women make friends, mm-hmm. and it's, mm-hmm. You know, I barely know how men make friends.
Right.
Which is going to be the question that fills my inbox after this.
Yeah, episode. sure.
Which one?
How do you do this? Yeah, I mean, often on the show when we get into subjects like this or similar to this, that's usually the question. Same with the fatherhood stuff. How do I be that?
Yeah, it's interesting because I'd say, wouldn't say I have a lot of good friends, but I'd say I have some definite, you know, I could name them.
Right? Yep.
Great friends.
Yeah.
And I'm generally not a real friendly guy. And so
I'd second that.
Yeah. So to ask, how do you have, you know, how did you make these friends? I could honestly say, I hardly know.
Uh-huh.
I really do. I hardly know. So I know that I have friends who I love dearly who, you know, who've had a more prominent and a less prominent place in my day-to-day life over the years, right? Because of circumstance, mm-hmm. mostly because mm-hmm. of circumstances. But I know that
geography.
Like, yeah, it can be a lot sure. of things. But
one of the things you know is that where you have a friend, you pick up where you left off.
Right, and that's what yeah, I was going to say. Yeah, and yeah. we did.
Yep. Scott and I did that.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, I went out to Georgia, pastor. Where the heck you went all over? You were at yeah. the camp, then you were up to Carson City, and we got back together after all those years. It was like we had never left.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean,
I'd say the same with Aaron Peterson and I. Yeah. We hadn't seen each other in a while. And that's a great story, too. I mean, that story is great. Aaron Peterson was living up in Washington, just a friend of mine. And my friend Jeff Mallinson, who listeners may know from coming on the show, Prophet Concordia University.
Mm-hmm. Virtue in the Wasteland host.
Virtue in the Wasteland host. He was the academic dean at Trinity Lutheran College up in Washington. And he and Aaron started getting together and didn't really realize that I knew Jeff or that I knew Aaron. And Jeff one day was saying, yeah, my friend Scott Keith. And Aaron goes, Scott Keith, that's my best friend. How do you know him? He's like, Jeff's like, we're great friends. It's like, you know, and it's just a... you know, and I actually hadn't seen Jeff in a while
yeah.
and hadn't seen Aaron in a while yeah. at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, in some ways, I think we have to just thank God for his graciousness in giving us a friend or two or three.
Yeah.
That they're
yeah.
gifts from heaven.
Yeah,
and I do, to kind of go back to what Caleb said about that you'll get questions on this, is I do think you can put yourself in a position. I think these days, maybe that's even more of
oh, yeah.
encouragement that should be out there. That you know, you got to kind of come out from behind your screens and
oh,
things
yeah.
like that, and you got to be engaged with other.
I think
other
even
men.
Even if you can get past that, right, to doing yeah. to being more, hesitant to use the word social, but
sure.
social.
Sure.
A lot of what the internet has done and what Facebook and things has done is you can even put up more barriers than you would have been able to. And so I think some of that genuine friendship comes from vulnerability around this, and that's even harder. So even if you do achieve some sort of social connection, getting to that vulnerable state is even more rare.
With Dr. Paul Fairweather, he realized decades ago that the men weren't really friends, didn't have friends, and he started these men's group. And the coinage there was not success. The coinage was what wasn't working. The coinage was failures or need or just the opposite of what we see. And man, was that ever powerful. Where it was okay in this group of men to fail.
To fail
utterly.
Right.
You name it. And I'd never seen that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I saw it with my dad, but I'd never seen it more broadly. Mm. And it is powerful brew.
Yeah. In many ways, I don't want to get back into it, but I think the conversation, sort of the online conversation that's going on right now, that's exactly what it's lacking. Exactly what it's like.
Well, I used to have students over, a lot of friends and a few students over on Saturday nights, and that's what it was.
Yeah.
It was no demands, lots of good food, lots of good drinks, and we did it without fail. And the goal of the thing was that here things are okay.
Right.
Here things are okay.
Yeah.
Always important that alcohol is involved.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Well, no, I'm just kidding. I don't think
it's wrong. I mean, I think there are there's an aspect to that where you were talking about an unwillingness to sort of lay yourself bare in your generation. And I do think that the internet and social media contribute to that for multiple reasons, right? You can hide behind the screen. You can create a false sense of yourself that's completely unverifiable, you know, by what you put on, put on that screen, what you project of yourself. And then I think there's probably a fear that if you actually go out and meet the real people, that they might see the truth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, the truth is that you're not happy all the time, that it's not all sexy and happy selfies, and it's, you know, that it's messy and that it's dirty and that there's failure and that there's sin and that there's brokenness and despair.
Yep.
And that because you have to put that image of yourself up on social media to be quote unquote successful, it's not the story of success or the language of sex, right? But in order to do that, to be successful in that format, you have to always project that image. There's an insecurity there.
Yeah. Deadly.
And I'm not sort of praising the overuse of alcohol, but I'm saying one thing that a few drinks will do.
Break down barriers.
Yeah, it'll make you sort of the you that's in not make you, but help you. I'm not, this is coming out wrong.
We're but not condoning getting in vino plastered.
In vino veritas. In wine there's truth, right? Yeah. So, and I think Lewis, you know, he poured the drinks at the beginning of that story.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
It's okay to gather around the good pleasures of life is what I'm trying to say. Right. There's something important about that.
After Joy died, he didn't really want to be around people, but he wanted to hear the sound of men's voices, not necessarily talking to him, probably not talking to him, but to hear the sound of it, which any man who's had a friend recognizes. As Lewis had some friends.
Yeah.
All right, great. On that note, we're about time for our break, so we're going to take a short break, let Paul talk about some projects, and then we'll be back to the show.
Great.
Welcome to our break. As you've been listening, we have Pastor Paul Koch on the show, and as we mentioned last episode, or as I brilliantly mentioned last episode, this episode, he's editor-in-chief over at The Jagged Word.
Better be careful, your head's not going to fit through the door after this show.
And so we thought Paul could talk about what he's doing over at The Jagged Word, and also talk about maybe just hit again for people who skip episodes or come in on this episode the first time, your new podcast.
Yeah, so thejaggedword.com, it's great that we could bring it up here on a conversation about friendship, because that's really how it started and really continues to be that. It is a group of friends who who write on the blog on various topics. Some you will love and agree with, some you will not, and that's kind of fine. And it's a very free conversation. Some pastors, most pastors, we have Scott who writes, my wife writes, Caleb writes. I think you're the only non-clergy folk, right?
We are now, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
We ran the other ones off.
We did. They're like, I can't handle this anymore.
And but it's a wonderful blog. We've had great success. We're very proud to be sponsored by 1517 The Legacy, who enables us to keep doing that. We get to go around to the seminaries and treat the fourth year SEM students to beers and conversation, and we even do some fundraising for a student from each seminary every year. So it's a lot of fun, lots there. So go there to thejaggedword.com and check it out. And a quick plug again, since we're talking about friendship, especially, I get together with two of my friends, Pastor Joel Hess and Pastor Ross Engel, and we have a podcast there called Ringside with the Preacherman, and it's kind of like we're in a boxing ring. This is the brainchild of Joel Hess, and he what he does is he gives us topics. They're usually kind of contemporary topics, things that are going on in the church and the world. His tagline for us is always where the sacred and the profane collide, and he gives us all of four whopping minutes on a topic and rings the bell, and we shift to another topic. We don't always listen to the bell, but we try to be good about it sometimes. And we go through. It's a lot of fun, so I encourage people to check that out. You can find that on thejaggedword.com. There's at the top, there's a tab for podcasts, and just click on that. Or on the side, it says listen to our podcast, and you can follow it everywhere. Or as Caleb said last time, if
subscribe.
Yes, right. So you're already listening to this delightful podcast, so you can just search for Ringside with the Preacherman and subscribe to ours as well. We'd love to have you. And once you're there, you can listen, and it gives you all the places where you can leave feedback for us as well. So
fantastic.
Yeah.
Thanks. So this is the third podcast sponsored by 1517 The Legacy Project now.
I know, man.
Virtue in the Wasteland, Thinking Fellows.
Right. Actually,
Inside.
We're becoming a syndication.
That's right. And actually, here's a fascinating thing. I was in this conversation we were having earlier about friends. This is why these projects work, to be blatantly honest, is they are fueled by friendship. They really are. It's kind of, I remember, I don't know, we've been doing Jaguar, you said almost 4 years now. I mean, it's been a while. You know, it's kind of like if nobody was reading and nobody was listening, I think we'd still do it anyway, because we kind of like each other and we love, like, the project. And so
I'll give you a line from Lewis from The Four Loves. Oh, you're interested in that subject as well? Come join us.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, it's exactly what it is. And so I think these things will endure and continue to produce.
Yeah, the Jagged Word's a great example of that. I mean, basically what Paul started writing not too long after, I think only a week or two after he started writing.
It's like, Scott, I need you.
Yeah, he started writing. And basically people need to understand what Paul has asked us to do is to write an article every week, 51 weeks a year. We get week off.
Yeah.
51 weeks a year. Just because.
Yeah.
Like, there's no...
Nobody's getting paid.
And you, I'll tell you what, after a while, you feel the deadline, right? But you still do it. Now, we sometimes will cheat, you know, have somebody fill in or do a rerun. But not very often. I'd say we all write, I mean, in the neighborhood of 45...
Yeah,
upwards of 45 articles.
I've been bad lately.
It is. You have been bad lately.
I have been very bad lately.
It is amazing, actually, that I tell people that when they ask about the blog. I say, you know, it's kind of bizarre that everyone still keeps writing. I mean, they just and it's good stuff, engaging, thought-provoking conversations from that blog. So, check it out.
I one point wrote the 10, what was it, the 10...
Something about why you hate blogging.
Yeah, the 10 reasons why I hate blogging. You know, all the different types of blog. The angry blog, the angry, drunk blog.
That's right. The reactionary blog.
All right. That's great.
That's fun. So I think you'll want to read that if you're not already doing so, because it is a blast.
All right. Back to friends.
Back to friends. It's all you, man.
So over the break, I swear we should just get a mic and set it in the table for the break.
So dangerous. I know. So dangerous.
We need like an explicit version that's the during the break bonus episode. Right?
It would have a lot of breaks in it for names, publishing houses.
It'd be redacted.
Yeah.
We'd be like, you, my, beep, 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 beep.
Yeah.
And so, but one of the things we were talking about was Paul brought up this idea that one of the things that's very much lacking in our little universe, I'll say, now maybe not our direct sort of part here, but our larger church universe is this, and Rod too brought up the idea of failure, right? This, the friendship in a lot of ways is a place where you're a failure and it's okay.
Yeah.
And the language isn't the language of success. And a while ago when a lot of this came up, I wrote a blog called From Piss Trough to Horse, Friendship from Piss Trough to Horse Trough. And it's not that from Tombstone, but from the other movie that came out around the same time, Wyatt Earp with Kevin Costner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a line in there. It's again, that in less of a way, that's also, that movie's too about the friendship between Doc and Wyatt. Mm-hmm. But there's this line in here that I just love because it, to me, it illustrates that essentially what had happened was, Doc had just gotten into another fight with Big Nose Kate, which is the whore that he comports with all the time. And, he's caused this big ruckus and Wyatt has had to drag him outside and dunk his face in the horse trough five or six times just to get him sobered up enough to stop trying to kill her. Mm-hmm. And, at one point Wyatt just asked him, he says, "What's wrong with you, Doc?" And Doc says, "I'm dying of tuberculosis. Everyone who knows me hates me. I sleep with the nastiest whore in Kansas. And every morning I wake up surprised that I have to spend another day in this pisshole world." And Wyatt's response is classic. It's, all he says is, "Not everybody that knows you hates you, Doc."
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I...
Yep.
We need that.
Yep.
We need that. I mean, that's gospel.
Yep.
That is gospel.
Yep.
Right. Yeah.
And that's, I mean, that is so much a part of this, and it's so much a part of what's missing. It's so much a part of what was ever present on the back deck, even before it was the back deck on Blueberry. I mean, I remember going over to your house in Irvine, not as frequently, but still, you know, you showed up at that house, and you knew that not everybody that knew you hated you.
Yep.
Yeah.
And just sheer gospel. And so many men don't have that. When I was a student at Concordia, this comes out a lot in Being Dad, but when I was a student, when we were students at Concordia, Rod would talk a lot about this thing. I remember you showed the video, and I was like, what the hell is this? But it was Robert Bly, you know, doing his gathering of men. We're sitting in some contemporary religious bodies in America class or something, and Rob brings in a VCR tape and sticks in, and it's this old man in a sweater, you know, like a Bill Cosby sweater, talking to a bunch of men, and it's Bill Moyers interviewing Robert Bly, who's an American poet, and Robert Bly is saying this. I mean, he's saying, this is in the 90s, he's saying, men don't have this, and they're dying on the inside.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
They're dying.
I have a, so... after your book, Scott, Being Dad, there was a lot of conversation about kind of the what next sort of thing. The kind of comments you probably get, you know, asking
every time I teach it
on the podcast. Yeah, and up in Ventura, we got a group together of men, and we don't meet at the church intentionally. We don't open with a prayer. We don't close with a prayer. We gather at a guy who owns an old camera shop.
That's a great camera shop.
It's beautiful, yeah. And we go in there.
You should give
him
a plug. What's the name of the shop?
Dexter's Camera, yeah.
Dexter's Camera.
Yeah, he does really well. He's a great guy, Greg, the owner. And we basically sit in there. We started out just kind of talking about what it was to be a man today, fatherhood, what we learned from our fathers. We kind of shared stories. And then we ended up actually doing Iron John, not reading the book, but rather reading the fairy tale and taking it in pieces. And then So a few of the men now have read, are reading along in the book, but they don't have to kind of read to come. And we have those conversations flowing from the way he divides it up in the book. And I had a gentleman last time we met. He was talking about some of his friends, and he said, they would never even have this conversation with me. You know, talking about his friends, like conversations about being a father and handing things on to your kids or what it is to struggle and suffer and why that's necessary to have a strenuous life, these kind of things. And I said, well, you know, you just do like what we're doing here.
Yep.
He goes, well, you can't do, like, if he's younger, a younger man, but he's like, I don't think I could even have this conversation.
Yeah.
With even the people he would call friends that he's known for years.
Yeah.
And that's problematic.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It has to be cultivated though a little bit.
I think it does.
And I think that's what you're doing, and that's that gathering of men, that's what he was doing.
Yep.
I mean, the men who when they hadn't talked about this before.
Nope.
And the video is just gut-wrenching, just heart-wrenching, because when he talks to these guys, he brings out the conversations and he asks them very simple questions like, hey, can you tell me the story of a time when another man has influenced your life positively? And I swear to you, not one of these crusty old men get through that story without
tearing up.
Tears.
Yeah.
I mean, and then he does the same to the young men, and it's just,
yep.
What you get is you automatically understand how important this is in the lives of men and how much in the day-to-day lives, unless that importance is cultivated, we don't understand it.
Yep.
Like we don't identify it.
Yep.
It's just huge. This comes out, I think it's funny, is that I hadn't really ever put a sort of theological connection on this other than like what I did on...
Bly's an atheist.
Right. But then, you know, running into Jim Nestegan, when I started studying with Jim Nestegan, I tried to read everything that he wrote and, and Ferdy wrote, and I read their little, Nestegan and Ferdy together did a explanation of Luther's small catechism called Free to Be.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have it, get it. It's probably going to cost you $105 on Amazon.
Goodness.
But
because it's out of print, right?
I mean, think of all the other things you waste $100 on and then maybe buy the book anyway. because it's a life changer. I've handed that book to people that I've been catechizing into the faith.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the thing that seals the deal nine times out of 10, if that makes any sense.
Interesting.
But there's a section in there. It's at the very end. It's like the last three pages. They write this. They're talking about this line that's in one of our Lutheran confessions, the small called articles, where Luther discusses this idea of the mutual brotherly consolation of the saints.
Right.
Yep.
And Luther calls it the sharing of the gospel. Now, I want to be clear here. This could be, but is in your everyday life probably not going to work out specifically as the literal, you know, 1 Corinthians 15:1-6, you know, story of the gospel. It's gospel in the sense that it's like what I just read from the Wyatt Earp movie. You know, not everybody that loves you or knows you hates you, Doc.
Yep.
It's gospel in that sense. And when Nestegan and Ferdy explain it, they say this. They say, Luther called it the mutual conversation and consolation of the brethren. It is the friendship you share with others around you who belong to Christ, another powerful means God uses to keep us in grace.
Yep.
And I thought, holy crap.
Yep. Yep.
You know, that is, how many times do we just pass that over and not realize that it's been those little conversations, those little relationships that, you know, we're walking along that has kept us in the faith.
Yep.
That has kept us in the faith. I mean, I don't know. It's maybe different for pastors. It's maybe not. But there's been a lot of dark times in my church life. A lot of like on and on again, off again. Where going to church was that thing that was driving me out of the faith.
Absolutely.
Not keeping me in the faith.
Absolutely.
Where every time I went and sat in the pew, I was a step farther away from my assurance, not closer to it.
Yep.
And that it has been the brothers.
Yep.
You know, and some of them unbelievers.
Yep.
Who have reminded me of forgiveness, of graciousness, of kindness, of mercy.
Of God's.
Of God.
These things of him.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it can get really obscure in the church.
It can.
Oof-da.
And it, and I think it's why Lewis ends it, this whole thing on life, natural life, has no better gift to give. Who could have deserved it?
Yeah.
You know, on this, who could have deserved it?
Right, right. I wanted to bring up just something that I see, that I'm concerned with anyway, is amongst the clergy, since you talked about pastors in particular. I think this, the crisis of friendship is very much pronounced amongst the clergy. When you gather together with, when pastors gather together, there tends to be a lot of, things are guarded. Things are not, let's just put it, it's not friendship. When that can happen though, when friendship, can be found alongside a brother engaged in that activity, alongside you, that's a game changer.
Yes. And you have somebody to call.
Yeah. Yeah. I was fortunate both in, when I was down in Georgia, my first call, I had a group of guys, we got together and worked, translated the text every Tuesday morning. And those of that group, the vast majority of them became friends. I mean, these were men I could call. They were men who, some of them would call me at a drop of, you know, they would call me, hey, I need you here. And you would show up because, they were battling things and they needed me. And when I was battling things, I needed them.
Yep.
When I took the call out to California, that was my greatest fear. Actually,
of course,
leaving that group.
Of course.
And so I had to work. This is kind of going back to what I talked about earlier, Caleb, that kind of trying to put yourself in a position where you can at least create these friendships.
Mm-hmm.
I went out of my way. When I arrived in California, I went to that very first pastor's conference. Actually, one of the first people I ran into was you, Rod. And then I went around to guys I knew were in my circuit, and I just asked every one of them, hey, do you want to meet with me? You know, I felt like a little kid.
Hey, you want to come over my house and play?
Yeah. It was like, and it was that hope that something could be created.
Yep.
And it took a while. But now, from that group,
Bob Hiller,
Tim Barquette. I mean, we've become, Tim and I are really close. Bob and I are really close. I mean, these are guys that you share stories with now that you're united to. But it came from that. I mean, it was an intentional. You had to kind of work at it.
Yep.
And you kind of, you're hoping, kind of like you said earlier, right? You're just kind of that God would grant you this gift of friendship through this meeting. But you have to meet. I mean, you got to get together.
Yep.
You know.
Yep. It's in the body.
So I would encourage any pastors that listen, if you don't have a friend, and they don't have to be in the church. Friends, I'm glad I have Scott as a friend who is not a pastor, who can speak openly and freely, as he often will, about things like the pastoral office without being guarded or worried about things, is refreshing, and you need that as well. But man, if you're doing this job alone and then you're called to preach and teach, I don't know how you can do it for long by yourself.
Yeah.
It's going to unfold on you, unravel.
Yeah.
Yeah. We do a little thing with 1517 every month that many of the listeners probably don't know about. It's not really, I mean, we're trying to, in a sense, model what happened at Rod's back deck. We call it the thinkery. I mean, it's just everybody that's involved with the project or projects are invited to come over, usually to our house, once a month. And
it's tomorrow.
It's
tomorrow night, right?
It's mostly the brothers.
Yep.
There's, you know, very little business that goes on, and that's very intentional.
Yep.
I've actually been encouraged to include more business and have fought against it. You know, right. I want the guys just to, and, you know, and now we're even adding a lady or two to the mix here to talk.
Yep.
Yeah.
To be together.
The mutual consolation of the brethren.
Right.
Right.
I think that's where we end. Great show.
All right.
Hey, Paul, I said this last time. I'm going to count you as a host who's not always here. Anytime you want to come back, invite yourself.
Oh, great.
You're here.
Awesome. I will do that.
No longer a guest.
There we go.
Yeah.
All right. We'll catch you next time. Thank you for listening.